Welcome to the Richard Roper Podcast. I am Richard Roper. Thanks to everyone who's been listening and downloading and sharing. And I appreciate your comments. I've been getting a lot of great emails. You can reach me at rroper@suntimes.com. That's rroper@suntimes.com. We're a couple of days past the Oscars, and you know, there's been so many recaps and all these experts and self-appointed experts. I'm somewhere in between, weighing in on the results and the telecast itself. I have one final thought about the aftermath of the Oscars and what's been happening the last couple of days. I'm going to share that with you guys, and then we're going to turn the corner, because right around the bend is St. Patrick's Day. We're going to talk about some of the great St. Patrick's Day movies of all time and some great St. Patrick's Day TV episodes. All of that and much, much more, including reviews. But first, here's a reminder. The Richard Roper Show is brought to you by AmericanEagle.com Studios. The digital landscape is changing rapidly, and to compete in today's online business environment, you need an experienced partner. Since 1995, AmericanEagle.com has partnered with companies of all sizes, offering web design, web development, e-commerce, mobile apps, and digital marketing to drive your overall business's success, because they believe that today's online world is your online opportunity. Visit AmericanEagle.com to get started today. That's AmericanEagle.com. Okay, we had the Academy Awards. Thanks to everybody also, by the way, who participated in the annual Beat the Critic contest with my home newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times, where you try to out-predict me, and then we choose one lucky winner. Maybe lucky, I don't know if that's really the word, who gets to go to an advanced screen. You get to bring a bunch of your friends, and we get you drinks and food, and we'll see an advanced screening. That'll be coming up in a couple of months. I think, I didn't double-check, I think I got 16 out of 23, somewhere around there. After I talked to you guys and went through my Oscar ballot, in the weeks after that, the couple of weeks after that, I did hedge my bets, so to speak, when I was giving interviews and doing some other stuff and talking about the Oscars, because I had predicted Lily Gladstone and Paul Giamatti, but it was becoming increasingly evident down the home stretch that it was going to be Emma Stone and Cillian Murphy. But I wanted to stick to my guns, even though I knew my guns were going to misfire. Now, here's what I want to talk about really quickly, though. We all know who won and all that stuff and the ups and downs of Jimmy Kimmel's monologue. I thought he was great. You know, sometimes you're going to miss with a few jokes, but they had some great routines. John Cena in a memorable bid. And, of course, Ryan Gosling brought down the house. By the way, people have asked me, can you be nominated for an Emmy for a performance at the Oscars? The telecast itself can be nominated. It has been nominated. I think it's even won Emmys in the category of like variety special or something like that. But the songs have to be, I think, originally done for television. So even though it was an original production number, it wasn't an original song. So I'm sure I'll get corrected on this, but I don't think you can nominate an individual performance from the Oscars for an Emmy. And you certainly can't nominate a performance from the Emmys for an Oscar. And nobody gets a Tony unless you step on stage. That's all that. But here's what I want to talk about. We've seen this a lot, you know, over the last few years, obviously, with the increasing omnipresent nature of social media. And as we know now, no matter what you say, no matter what you do, somebody's going to have a comment about it. Somebody's going to weigh in on it. It doesn't matter if it's politics, sports, lifestyle, you name it, which is all well and good. It's the marketplace of ideas. I wish people would stick to the facts before expressing their opinions and not be, you know, retweeting or reposting things that aren't true. But that's a whole other topic. But the thing that bothers me, guys, is that more and more, every single frame, every single syllable, every single moment after someone is crowned the winner goes under the microscope. So if somebody goes on stage in the Grammys and it appears that they didn't acknowledge a legend who's on stage because they're so excited and they're just grabbing the trophy and then they hug them backstage, the person they supposedly snubbed, but then everyone's like, I can't believe that queen was disrespected or that king of the business or whatever the case may be. And then the speeches themselves. If you make even an offhand remark that could be misinterpreted, if you forget to thank someone, if you make a joke that some people are offended by, it all gets picked apart. So, for example, the winner for best score for Oppenheimer thanked his parents for giving him musical instruments as a kid and not video games. And now certain influencers in the video game community are outraged and saying, hey, listen, there's a lot of great music that is actually composed for video games, and video games are still being demonized. And, you know, what a bunch of horse shit. You're not you can't possibly really be offended and deliberately twisting this man's words, because all he was saying is he thanks his parents because they didn't just say, here's some video games, go in the living room, play video games. They gave him musical instruments and encouraged him to explore his musical genius and creativity. So if it keeps going this way, I want to play you guys a clip from when Joe Pesci won the Best Supporting Actor Award for Goodfellas more than 30 years ago. And listen to the presentation here and listen to Joe Pesci's acceptance speech.
And the Oscar goes to Joe Pesci in Goodfellas.
Well, it's my privilege. Thank you.
That was it. That's the whole speech. And you know what? If I'm a winner at this point, I might consider just going the Joe Pesci route. And that way you can avoid all the bullshit. Of course, then people would be like, how rude. If he did that in present day, they'd be like, Joe Pesci didn't even thank his co-stars or Martin Scorsese or his acting teacher or, you know, it's like, why do you care that much about an acceptance speech for a gold man or a little record player or whatever the award may be? People just looking for fights all the time. All right, moving on from the Oscars. As I mentioned, we're just a few days out from St. Patrick's Day. Bear with me, guys. I think some of you know, I mean, I'm Irish-American, not Irish. I'm not from Ireland, but we like to say Irish-American. Relatives, tons of relatives still living there. My grandmother came from Ireland. But I am very partial and proud, just like Cillian Murphy was. He said he was a proud Irishman when he accepted the Oscar. I hope that didn't offend anybody that he's a proud Irishman. But we have talked about some of this stuff in previous St. Patrick's Day days. I just want to mention some. Now, these are movies for St. Patrick's Day. They're not necessarily set during St. Patrick's Day. Some of them have scenes around them. But of course, as you know, that was, you know, Ireland has now, in Dublin, the big cities, they've embraced St. Patrick's Day as a day of celebration because the Americans and other cultures have. It was originally more of a religious holiday. So that being said, having said that, as I say, curb your enthusiasm, the Banshees of Inisherin from just a couple of years ago, Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, one of the all-time twisted dark comedies about friendship, also just gloriously gloomy Irish countryside and seaside cinematography. Now, here's a movie I have to say is very uneven. I'm not a huge fan of the film. It's set, though, in County Mayo, where my family's... notice I almost went to County Mayo. How annoying. I'm selling Lucky Charms all of a sudden here. It's set, though, I think primarily in County Mayo. Wild Mountain Time from 2020. The cast is amazing. The story's beyond hokey. But there are some great scenes, including a moment where Emily Blunt as Rosemary Muldoon sings a live version of Wild Mountain Time. And if you get a chance, just check out that clip if you don't want to watch the whole movie. And it's a tribute to a character in the movie who has passed away. And Christopher Walken's reaction to the song is a reminder that, yes, he's still Christopher Walken, but he says like three words during this whole scene. And it's gloriously beautiful acting. Another movie from just a few years ago that I think got seven Oscar nominations, Kenneth Branagh's Belfast from 2021, the coming of age drama based in part on his own life experiences. Love that film. Here's a film that I think is, I don't want to say has been forgotten, but kind of, you don't hear as much conversation about it as I think you should. That's a film called In America from 2002.
Are you in love with her? Are you in love with her?
No. I'm in love with you, and I'm in love with your beautiful woman, and I'm in love with your kids, and I'm even in love with your unborn child. I'm even in love with your anger. I'm in love with anything that lives.
You're dumb. I'm sorry.
Now, this is about an Irish immigrant family's adventures in New York City, and I think it's just brilliantly dumb. If you're looking for a documentary, look up a documentary called The Irish Pub, which actually takes you on a tour of genuine, authentic Irish pubs, which is fantastic. Go back to 1998 for Waking Ned Devine, where the dead man wins the lottery. That's kind of a classic Irish comedy. And then a film that still resonates and a lot of people still consider one of the great Irish films, Ireland set films of all time. And we're talking, and one of the best John Wayne performances of all time. I speak, of course, of The Quiet Man from 1952.
Danaher, you owe me £350. Let's have it.
So the IRA's in this too, huh?
If it were Red Will Danaher, not a scorched stone of your fine house would be standing.
A beautiful sentiment.
I'll pay you. Never.
That breaks all bargains. You can take your sister back. It's your custom, not mine. No fortune, no marriage. We call it quits.
Directed by John Ford and also featuring the brilliant and wonderful Maureen O'Hara. Quiet Man. That's a partial list of some of my favorite Irish movies. Now, I also want to go back. I do this every year and just pay tribute to The Fugitive. One of my, maybe my favorite movie ever set and filmed in Chicago. This is the film that came out, golly, more than 30 years ago now. Had a worldwide gross of $370 million on a $40 million budget. 7 Academy Award nominations. Tommy Lee Jones won for Best Supporting Actor. And there's so many things to look for. I've mentioned this before, but I love the fact that the famous St. Patrick's Day parade scene was actually shot on March 17th, 1993. Just 5 months before the movie came out. Talk about a fast turnaround. And you'll notice in the real life parade, if you're from Chicago, certain notable icons, if you will, including the Chicago Stockyard Kilty Band players. There, I did it again. And you'll also notice that it was really, really cold because in the movie, because it was really, really cold in real life. It was, I think it got up to about 30 in the low of 19, wind chill factor of -6. And the other cool thing is if you want to look at a movie called Blink from that same time period, it actually also filmed a scene during that same parade in a different area a few blocks away from The Fugitive. Aidan Quinn plays a Chicago police detective. He's trying to find Madeline Stowe's Emma Brody. She's the blind musician who sort of witnesses a murder, but it's very deep and kind of twisty and a really good film. So look for that, too. The Fugitive, we celebrate you, is one of the great St. Patrick's Day scenes, the parade scene, and also one of the great Chicago set movies of all time.
Officer, officers, this man in a blue top coat waving a gun and screaming at a woman.
Stop that man! He's a U.S. Marshal! Let him go! Let him go! He's a U.S. Marshal! Let him go! Let him go! Close the gate! Go! Lock it down!
He's in the plaza, Sam. He's heading east through the plaza.
East through the plaza?
Right here.
Towards the Picasso.
He's going east towards the Picasso.
I also mentioned that we were going to talk about St. Patrick's Day TV episodes. You know, going back and looking at some lists and making my own list, I didn't realize, I think, that there were so many, and they're so clever. I, of course, one of my favorite shows of all time, The Office, had season 6, episode 19, was called St. Patrick's Day. And it was a big day at Dunder Mifflin. And as Steve Carell, as Michael Scott, says about St. Patrick's Day, it's the closest the Irish will ever get to Christmas. I love that. And we end up with the whole gang going out to celebrate it. Poor Richards. Kind of a great, funny, as always, episode of The Office. They had a great St. Patrick's Day episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, deep into the run of the show, where Charlie Kelly, played by Charlie Day, actually thinks he has caught a leprechaun. And I'll leave it to you to find out what happens in that episode. Also, Cheers, you want to go back a little while. And again, it's going to be kind of interesting because this is deep into the run of Cheers. Season 11, episode 19, the Cheers gang. And remember, there was Gary's Old Town Tavern. That was their nemesis. They play him in softball and have these big rivalries. They have a competition over who's going to make the most sales on St. Patrick's Day. And there's a great musical number in there. Something that's almost similar to what happened with John Cena in the Oscars. And we'll leave it at that. So check out... it's called Bar Wars 7, The Naked Prey, that episode of Cheers. And finally, again, when we talk about efforts that I think, you know, have kind of gotten lost to time, there was a series on, I believe it was CBS, called Early Edition. This is going back more than 20 years now. You guys might remember this. It started very young. Kyle Chandler played a guy who, and you can tell how long ago this was because it's all about print newspapers. In fact, it's about my home newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times. The gimmick of this show, which is kind of a, you know, Twilight Zone-esque, but with more of an upbeat tone, if you will, is that he gets Gary, his character of Gary gets the paper a day early. So he'll see a headline about a fire and then he can try to prevent the fire. He'll see a headline about this and that and try to prevent it or try to, you know, use it to the greater good. He doesn't try to win the lottery and things like that. That's the thing about the magic paper that arrives with a cat on his doorstep every morning. This one is kind of a lottery involved episode. It's called Luck of the Irish, and it's got some great messages about friendship and survival and loyalty and good luck and bad luck and the luck of the Irish. And I believe this ended up being the final episode ever of Early Edition. It ran for 4 seasons. It was a middling hit. Very smart show. I don't know if it's available. You know, a lot of these things kind of get lost to the internet and or to various streaming agreements. But Early Edition, the show was called. And you want to go deep into the weeds on that. I actually played a reporter on an episode of Early Edition and had a couple of speaking lines. And I still get royalties to this day. I really do. Like for $3 being on Early Edition. All right, folks, let's take a break. Let's sing the praises of Portillo's, and then we're going to take a look at a couple of new offerings coming your way. All right, kids, let's talk about Portillo's. It's one of my favorite places to eat on the planet Earth. My delivery history will bear this out. I also happen to live within walking distance of one of the Chicago Portillo's. Yes, that's right. I'm that lucky. It is amazing. You could order from the restaurant or the drive-thru, but if it's not near you, you can go to Portillo's.com and order. They got French fries. They got all kinds of comfort food. The amazing hot dogs, the Italian beef, the Italian sausage, some really good salads, by the way, if you want to take it a little bit easy, because you want to have a little bit room left for the chocolate cake, the best chocolate cake in the world. Think about it. Portillo's.com, P-O-R-T-I-L-L-O-S.com. That's how you spell it, Portillo's.com.
Something bad has happened to Mom. I've left 5 messages. If she's not returning our calls or texts, it's because she can't.
Pain is at my window.
Joy Delaney, mother of 4, has gone missing.
The storm is at my door.
What are you doing in Mom's room?
What can you tell us about her?
She will come back.
And where is she?
I said to my parents, don't trust her. I wouldn't listen.
Thank you. Please help me.
Do you think we're this, like, big, happy family?
Stan Delaney, did you kill your wife?
Secrets will poison any family. And what you don't know can hurt you.
Okay, that's a little bit of audio from Apples Never Fall. It's a new limited streaming dramatic mystery series airing on Peacock. Now, I have to say, I went into this with pretty high hopes because it's based on a novel by Leanne Moriarty. She's a very popular Australian author. She's done a bunch of books, but a couple of them have been adapted into very successful streaming series. Big Little Lies was on HBO. And then you remember that was two seasons. And then Nine Perfect Strangers on Hulu. So now comes Apples Never Fall, based on the book of the same name. It's all about, it's got a great cast, I should say this. And it's a great looking show. It's actually set in West Palm Beach, but they shot it on the Australia's Gold Coast, Queensland, I believe it's called. So it looks beautiful. Great cast. But I got to tell you, man, I'm not going to stay away from the spoilers. The spoiler alert is I thought it was quite terrible, mostly because of the ridiculous twists and plots in plot, the twists and turns that make no sense. One huge clue that never gets explained just goes away. I'm trying to be deliberately vague because you guys still might want to check this out. But here's the basic setup. Annette Bening, 5-time Oscar nominee Annette Bening. She is Joy Delaney. The great Sam Neill plays her husband, Stan. They've run a tennis academy in West Palm Beach for decades. Now they're selling it off and retiring. They've got four grown children, played by a wonderful cast led by Alison Brie and Jake Lacy. So it's a little bit like Succession, because you got this stern, cold, unforgiving patriarch played by Sam Neill and his four grown children, who long ago should have figured out that dad's never going to give them the love they so crave, but still compete for it. But at the center of this, again, is Annette Bening's Joy Delaney, who goes missing early on in the series. It appears there might have been foul play, so it's got a little bit of Gone Girl, although she'd be a gone older lady, lovely woman. She's missing. There's a lot of publicity about it. There's some discussion, could it be murder? Of course, attention immediately focuses on her husband, because they had a very prickly relationship, with multiple separations and lots of fighting and maybe even an affair in there. So it's all about this disappearance. And then there's a woman who shows up on the front door named Savannah of the house of the couple, Stan and Joy. They bring her in. She claims that she has escaped from her abusive boyfriend. She's got a cut on her forehead. And what drives me nuts about this thing is you have to either go for this or not. They immediately just take her in. Annette Bening's Joy basically adopts this stranger named Savannah. She claims, I lost my purse. I lost my phone. I can't be online because my boyfriend will stalk me. The story makes no sense. And yet she brings her into the family, lets her stay at the house, gives her free run at the house, starts confiding everything in her, brings her into all these family events. And you're like, well, this woman, this Joy Delaney woman, these are all in flashback scenes, by the way, because in present day, Joy has gone missing. But in these flashback scenes that go back about 7 months, we're like, why would you be so stupid as to take this young woman who shows up at your door with this story that may or may not be true? Why would you take her at face value? Why wouldn't you call the police? It makes no sense. So for the rest of the series, you're just thinking, well, Joy's a blithering nincompoop. She's an idiot for taking this woman in. There are some pretty cool stretches of dialogue, some dark humor, but we're left essentially with a family of narcissistic fools who are involved in a mystery that we care less and less about as the series goes on. It's called Apples Never Fall. And in this case, I guess they never do fall, because they're all kind of bruised and rotten apples. Okay, something you should see. It came out last week when we were talking about the Oscars, but I do want to mention it. It's The Gentlemen on Netflix.
Allow me to introduce myself. I used to be in business with your father. I have certain interests that I need to discuss with you.
Now, what happens down there?
Must have come as a bit of a shock. Inheriting a house, title. As the new landlord, you will receive a significant amount of money. In return, letting us carry out our activities.
Yous lack a dink in it.
What the...
So in order to stop ourselves being associated with criminals, we are going to become criminals.
We're not criminals, Freddy.
Lapsang Su Chunk.
This is from Guy Ritchie. You might remember the comedy, drama, crime feature film of the same name from 2020 with Matthew McConaughey and Charlie Hunnam and Michelle Dockery and Hugh Grant. Great, great movie. I really got a kick out of that. This series exists in the same universe as the movie, but don't expect to see any of those characters there. This is Theo James is in the lead here. It's a whole different set of characters. They do live in the same world where British aristocrats have marijuana farms underneath their estates, and it's sort of this whole literally underground business. Because it's a Guy Ritchie series, it's violent. It's got some great camera moves. It has an incredible cast. You know, one minute there's Giancarlo Esposito, you know, just all kinds of really cool supporting players. Vinnie Jones has a role that's different from what he usually does. I found it to be funny and filled with great action. And in this case, the plot twists and turns, and there are many, actually kind of make sense. So recommending The Gentleman. And before we go away, I also want to mention a film called Knox Goes Away. Now, this is directed by Michael Keaton.
You have a very rare form of dementia.
How much time do I have?
Weeks, not months. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Doc. Even if I hated you for telling me, I'd forget soon enough.
Sorry, I didn't mean to show up like this.
Do I know you?
Dad, please.
Miles, what happened?
This guy hurt my daughter.
So I killed him.
You don't pull this off, this all goes to hell. It's getting worse every hour. It's like a curtain coming down. I'm running out of time.
It finally got up to you, huh?
There's no coming back from this one.
And also stars Michael Keaton. This is the second film Michael Keaton has ever directed. In the late 2000s, I think around, I want to say 2009, guys, he helmed The Merry Gentleman. He played a professional hitman in that movie. And in Knox Goes Away, he also plays a professional hitman. What's interesting here is that Keaton's character of John Knox is this very sophisticated and worldly hitman. But he has been diagnosed with a neurodegenerative disorder, and he only a real life symptom. He doesn't have it, obviously, but it's a real life disorder that's particularly frightening and chilling, guys, because you lose your memory not over a matter of months and years, but within days and weeks. Within 2 or 3 weeks, he's told by his doctor he won't be able to recognize people he's known his whole life. He'll have events all scrambled. He won't remember common words. All that's going to go away. And in the meantime, he's a suspect in a triple murder, and he's trying to save his son, who is now the prime suspect in a separate murder, son played by James Marsden. So kind of a crazy, convoluted plot. But at the center of this, first of all, it's very stylishly directed by Michael Keaton. He's going for the full film noir look, and it has that, and the classic kind of jazzy score that you get in a million movies like this. And yeah, it dabbles in a lot of crime thriller cliches, but Michael Keaton portraying this guy, Knox Goes Away. You can tell the title there because there's a couple of different meanings. It's such a strong and richly layered and nuanced performance. It's not, he's not running down the street, not able to recognize anybody. He doesn't have huge temper tantrums. He just sort of slowly and then very quickly can't remember things and will look somebody right in the eye and he doesn't know who that is or can't remember a name, you know, for something very simple. And yet he has these moments of great clarity where he draws upon his decades of experience as a hitman to manipulate the story. I'm going to leave it at that. It's called Knox Goes Away. Strong work from one of our best actors, Michael Keaton. On that note, I want to thank everybody for listening. This is Richard Roper, and we will talk again soon.